Okay, we're going to pick up with question 315-1 and looking at our questions. And we're now in the third dwelling place. And like we said last week, you know, this is a really important one because the people who have gotten here are trying to progress and they want to progress farther. And they probably are trying to avoid all sin, including venial sin, as much as they can, and trying to grow in holiness and in prayer. But they also realize that prayer is really the way you express your relationship with God. And so it goes way beyond just saying formula prayers, like, you know, Our Father, Hail Mary, and Rosary, and stuff like that. You just talk to God. You know, it's just your way of just communicating with God. And so you begin to get into that kind of prayer. And so prayer becomes a way of just conversing with God. You just talk to Him. And you try to do it frequently. St. Teresa says that mental prayer is the frequent communication with the one who loves you infinitely. So you go into prayer knowing that God is infinite, that God can do everything. There's nothing He can't do. And that He loves you infinitely and wants you to be in heaven with Him. So you're communicating with somebody who has that kind of attitude towards you. He loves you with an infinite love, and he desires you, but He also gave you the gift of free will. So He's not going to be interfering with the gift of free will. And so He wants you to seek Him, but He's not going to force you to. He's not going to make you, because if He does, then what value is that? You know, He'd rather have you love Him on your own, through your own will, rather than impose it on you. And so that's where people are. And then they realize that their real objective is to encounter God in the prayer of union in the seventh dwelling place. And so she warns us in this dwelling place about complacency and stuff like that. Don't just feel real comfortable and everything else. You know, try to keep the goal in mind. In other words, you know, if you're playing football, you don't just want to make a first down. You want to make a touchdown. And you might be close to your own goal line, so you've got several first downs you have to make before you get to the touchdown. And so that's kind of what we're doing here. We're going through several different dwelling places, which each signify a progression in your prayer life. And that's what the dwelling places really are, you know. There.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Mary?
There you go.
Mary Voss just got here. So this growth in prayer is really, each dwelling place signifies a different growth in prayer. And then, so you're progressing, we're getting ready to go into the fourth dwelling place, and that's where the prayer takes on a supernatural character. You start seeing things that are more supernatural in nature happening in your prayer life. And a lot of times they just happen spontaneously, and you're not really expecting them, but they just happen. And so you accept them and you say thanks, you know. It's God's way of telling you, hey, I'm here for you. I want to share more of myself with you. He also, as you get into supernatural prayer, He's teaching you more about Himself. So He's a teacher, but the subject matter He's teaching is Himself. And that's the kind of cool thing about it. And so as you go through and progress, that relationship becomes very personal. Your prayer life becomes very personal. And you're talking to God as if He's, you know, right there with you. And so we have some of the saints like Brother Lawrence of the Resurrection that wrote a book on the practice of the presence of God. And so he was teaching people. And he was a simple little monk. He was like the doorkeeper. He wasn't a priest or anything. And but he was teaching people how to always live your life recognizing that God is right there with you, right next to you. He never leaves you. And so he developed this whole spirituality of the presence of God and to always, you know, keep that in mind. And it's a really interesting little book to read. It's not a long book, but it's something worth reading. So we're going to pick up with 3151. So Teresa's been talking to her sisters for a little bit and telling them, you know, don't be complacent, all this kind of stuff. Don't get super self-comfortable and all. Keep the end goal in mind at all times. And always keep striving for that. Go for that touchdown. Don't just go for the first down. And so she, so now she's turning around a little bit and speaking of souls that have gotten here, they're into the third dwelling place. And she says, "For the Lord has done them no small favor, but a very great one, in letting them get through the first difficulties. I believe that through the goodness of God, there are many of these souls in the world." So she thinks a lot of people have gotten at least to the third dwelling place. "They long not to offend His Majesty, even guarding themselves against venial sins. Certainly this is a state to be desired." And so it's a good thing to be here. It's a good thing to be here. You're avoiding sin. You're avoiding the occasions of sin. And that's a very, very good thing. So then the question is, if this state is such a good place to be, and if the soul has been favored by God to make it here, why should we want to go any farther? And I think we just kind of talked about that. And that's the whole point of this first part. She talks about don't be complacent. Don't be self-satisfied that that you're where you are, you know? So why should we want to go any farther? Because when you go farther, the relationship with God deepens. And the farther you go, the deeper it gets. We're on 3151.
Thank you.
Okay. So the farther you go, the deeper the closer this relationship goes. And in Teresa's case, you know, when she was well into the sixth dwelling place, she would have these spontaneous things where God would just come to her and put her into ecstasy. And sometimes he would do it in a way that was kind of funny. You know, she was, I think I mentioned last time, she was talking to a bunch of nobles one day, and she felt it coming on. And she said, "Oh, no, not now." You know, she was that familiar with God, that close to God, that she could talk to Him that way. A lot of people would be afraid to say something like that, you know, but she got to the point where she felt she could say anything to God. And He would never be offended.
Well, He knows your thoughts anyway, so it's kind of silly to say.
Yeah, yeah, that's
true.
Afraid
to say something.
Yeah, He knows your thoughts, so you know. But the idea that you can tell God anything, and if you get angry, it's okay to be angry when you talk to God. He understands human anger, you know. If something happens, you know, something happens to one of your kids or something, and you're upset. And you go to Him and you say, why did this have to happen? You know, and you're upset about it. He doesn't mind. He wants you to talk to Him. He wants you to bring those kind of things to Him. He doesn't want you to sit there and say, "Well, okay, if you insist." You know, that isn't the kind of way He wants you to deal with Him.
Well, you know, that's because I think with an individual person, if they are secure in your love, you can say anything to them. And so you can say anything to God if He knows you love Him.
Yeah. And that's the key to the whole thing, you know, the idea of you're growing in love for God. Because as you're progressing in this prayer, your love for God will also increase.
But don't you think, as going through this, I thought, there are probably many people who are here
Yeah.
don't know it because they've never read this.
Yeah.
So.
That's probably true.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. And so that was one of the things that impressed me so much about her book, that she talks to it on a level that almost anybody can understand mm-hmm. and grasp, you know. Her sisters were like 16 years old, you know, so she's talking to them and telling them, you know, how to grow in prayer and what to expect as you go through and all. And so all of us, a little beyond 16, I think, mm-hmm. we can kind of, you know, understand what she's saying and see how it relates, and then use that information and knowledge to grow our own prayer life mm-hmm. and start talking to God just like he's your best friend, because he is. He's the best friend you've got. I got upset when I found that out, because I thought I was everybody's best friend, you know. But however, I cried for 3 or 4 days, and then I realized that, no, God is your best friend, you know, always. Everybody's best friend. And so you talk to him that way. And you also know that he can do anything. And he loves you with an infinite love. So all those things combined just begin to make it much easier to talk to him. If something's really bugging you, ask him to help you with it. You know, you're struggling with a problem. You know, ask him to help you solve the problem. Ask your guardian angel to help you solve the problem.
I think that's what we need to tell teenagers now, with their high suicide rate and
yeah.
they're being so lonely. And what's the word when you on the internet that they're giving kids such a hard time and they're committing? So they just need to learn to do that, and nobody yeah. tells them to do.
Nobody that. Does. Yeah. Well, it's really crazy what you see well, happening with young kids now. With this transgender stuff too, you know,
yeah,
because they're trying to deny what they are, and then all these doctors are making a fortune off these surgeries, so they're encouraging them to go ahead and do it. Psychologists are encouraging them because they want to make the money for giving the psychological sessions and all like that, and they're taking these young kids and convincing them that they're not who they are and they ought to be somebody else, and then when they go through all this. And the surgeries are irreversible. They come out of it, and then a year or two later, they find out that, geez, I got buyer's remorse, you know? I didn't really want to do this. And then they can't reverse it, and they commit suicide.
And, you know, Johns Hopkins quit it for years because they found out that it wasn't working. But then when this all recurred, they were pressured into doing it again.
Yeah.
So it's really the education and the politics.
It's a lot of pressure. Even the politicians are doing, like Biden right now. He's
yeah.
doing everything he can to push transgenderism.
But why?
I think it's satanic. I just think it's something that happened to the media.
My brother says. He says it's evil.
It is evil. It is evil because he's pushing that. He's pushing, you know, abortion up until the time of birth and everything else, you know. And so you see these whole groups of politicians trying to force these immoral things on people. And it's just...
It's so they will get approval from the media, because the media gives... The more evil you are...
The more attention you get.
The more they approve of you.
Yeah.
But, you know, my daughter taught first grade for 30 years, and she said... Toward the end, families are so messed up.
Yeah.
You know, they mm-hmm. really are. And so I don't know.
Well, it's very sad when you see what's going on. And so one of the things Teresa tries to do is get you to reorient yourself toward a relationship with God. And then when you start doing that, you say, well, you know, who is God? You try to learn more about him. So you go to scripture, you learn about him. And then you try to grow in love for God. And so the more you know him, the more you can love him. And then you worry about doing his will. And so you keep doing that. It's like an iteration. And it becomes very important to kind of get into that mode, because then you're not trying to be somebody you're not. You recognize who you are, the self-knowledge thing. Self-knowledge and humility, those two things are coming back all the time. And so you recognize who you are, you recognize who God is, you recognize your relationship, and then you look with humility. You know, who do you want to imitate? Well, you want to imitate Jesus and the Blessed Mother. And that's what you want to try to do. And as perfect as they are, you don't think you're ever going to get there, but that's your goal, to imitate. Jesus says, imitate me. He's not going to tell you that if it's impossible to do. You know, he's never going to give you a command that you can't fulfill. And so he says, imitate me. So you try to imitate him. And Teresa tells us to imitate the Blessed Mother too, with her humility and grace and, you know, her love for God and love for us and everything else. So it kind of gets your whole life oriented in the right direction. But the idea is that we always want to keep that end goal in mind, that the prayer of union, and it's something that God has to bring you into. You can't get there by yourself. And so as you progress in prayer and you get to the further stages of prayer in your relationship with God, you get to the point where you're now disposed for him to do that for you. And, you know, so she talks about, you know, what that's like when you get there. So next question. 3152. Teresa says, of those who have reached this dwelling place, there's no reason why entrance even into the final dwelling place should be denied these souls, nor will the Lord deny them this entrance if they desire it. But such a desire is an excellent way to prepare oneself so that every favor may be granted. So souls here are even guarding themselves against venial sins. What are these extra favors so that every favor may be granted? What additional favors could Teresa be speaking of here? What do you think some of these favors might be?
I said a deepening understanding of your actual state, because too often we think we're something that we're not, or at
okay.
a level where
yeah.
we're really not.
Get the favor of not being self-deluded, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good one. And that all goes to self-knowledge and humility, you know, that's to help you understand that. Another favor is growing in love for God. You can never love God enough. You know, no matter how much you love him, you can always love him more. And so one of the favors that God can give you is to help you love him more, to want to be with him, to want to talk to him. And that desire, that love for God, will actually make you want to pray more, because you want to be with the one you love. You want to communicate with the one you love. And you don't have to use words. You know, when you're courting your future spouse, a lot of times you find just sitting on a park bench, just holding hands. You don't have to be talking all the time. I remember when Mary Beth and I went one of our first dates, we took a drive over to West Virginia to this little waterfall. And we were coming back, and I'm a kind of an introvert, and she's an introvert, you know. So she looked over and she said, do you mind if I'm just quiet? I said, no.
It's fine, huh?
That's fine, you know. It's kind of funny. But that idea of growing in that intimacy with God is a favor. And the nice thing about that kind of favor is that it's a gradual increase. He doesn't just pound you with it one day and it's the end all be all, you know, all at one time. It's a growth process. It's growing spiritually, and you're growing in your love for God, and then your desire to then communicate with him much more often than you had been. And so you make him present to you all the time. And just doing that alone helps you avoid a lot of sin. Because when you have that mindset, you say, geez, I'm not going to do something like that. It's going to offend him. He's right here next to me, you know. So all these little favors are all designed to help you get to the end state where you go into the prayer of union with God. All these little favors are little things that God will share with you and help you get there a little bit at a time. But it's all a growth process, a growth spiritually. Then 3161, getting into section 6 there. Anything else that you want to bring up?
I see also, can you talk about God favors? I see God's favor in the kinds of birds he sends to my bird feeder, in the wildflowers he puts in my front yard. I mean, that's, you know, every time I see.
Yeah.
Because his nature is beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. Because the God's beauty is reflected in his creation.
Yeah.
And so you look at this. I saw a picture on the internet just the other day about, I forget where it was in the country, but it was all the wildflowers were in bloom.
Oh,
in
yeah.
The mountain area. And it was just this splash of color all over
yes.
the place. It was just absolutely beautiful.
It's out west with all the rain they had.
Mm. Yeah.
It's in California.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just beautiful, you know. When I was living in Colorado, I used to take my kids out for hikes. And Mike had a heart condition. And so I'd let him walk as much as they could. Then when he was getting tired, I'd put him on my shoulders and then we'd finish walking. And a lot of times in the spring, they'd have these splashes in the mountains where you have these, all these Indian paintbrush and all these bluebells and all these beautiful different color flowers and all. It was just absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really
when
nice.
When you look at those things, man can't do that.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, God does a lot of things that we can't ever do. Like make honey, make milk, you know,
yeah.
like we talked about last time. You know, it's all those kind of things. So he's always trying to teach you about himself, not just directly, but by through his creation.
Mm-hmm.
And St. Paul talks about that in one of his letters, too, that we can know a lot about God just by looking at his creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's always teaching us. And so our job is to pay attention to the teacher. You know, don't just doodle in something while the teacher's talking. You listen to the teacher. Because he's going to talk to you in a lot of different ways. Yeah.
Jim, I just wanted to share many times when Bob and I are sitting, like we like to sit out on our deck and pray the rosary. And so many times we see cardinals. And I just feel like that's a little sign from God.
Yeah.
Well, we seen the first bald eagle about 2 weeks ago, and I almost knocked him out. While we were praying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we do the same thing. We, you know, we have a bird feeder and by our back deck in the yard, and we have cardinals coming, and we have bluebirds that come, and we have these little yellow and green birds that come. You probably see those too.
Goldfinch.
Yeah, they're really beautiful.
Yeah.
And they're just fun to watch. And then I put up a hummingbird feeder every year, and we get a lot of hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sit out there with the hummingbirds because I'm retired now. I don't have to go to work. And so I spend some time playing with my little friends, you know. And I get to the point where I can hold the bird feeder in my hand and they'll perch on my fingers and eat out of the bird feeder, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool because their little feet are so small, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they just hold on to the tip of your finger and then sit there and eat it. When you look at all this stuff, when you look at the variety, you know, it's just amazing to look at the variety of God. And when you look at it in detail, you realize that he never does the same thing twice. He doesn't repeat himself. And people have studied snowflakes. You can't find two snowflakes that are identical.
Amazing.
You look at a tree. You can't find two leaves that are exactly identical on that tree. There's something different about one of them compared to the other, even if it's the same kind of leaf, same kind of tree, and that splash of individuality really kind of gets you to thinking about, you know, what does it take in an infinite being to do something like that, to be able to make such individuality, and then you project that onto people. And you say, well, gosh, he makes us the same way. There's no two of us.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody on this earth exactly like me or you or anybody else. And so he treats us all as an individual. He doesn't look at humanity and say, I'm going to treat all of you as a group, as a club. He has an individual relationship with each one of us. And that's something that you start thinking about that, and it just begins to show how much he loves you, because he does build that in that individual relationship with you, and then dwells within your soul. And so you start putting all that together, and it really helps you in your growth in your prayer, because he's here with you all the time, you know. And so you start talking to him in ways that you never used to before, in a very personal way. And that's kind of the interesting thing about it. So we get to 316-1 in section 6. Teresa says, we all say we want this good. She's talking about the good of the final, you know, meeting with God, but it's more. You got to do more than just want it. You got to take action on your part to get there, and that's the whole growth in prayer thing and all. Since we all say that we want this good, but since there is need of still more, in order that the soul possess the Lord completely, it is not enough to say we want it. Just as this was not enough for the young man whom the Lord told what one must do in order to be perfect. Remember the rich young man, that story? Okay. So is Teresa saying we all must sell what we have, give to the poor, and follow Jesus in order to progress to the dwelling places?
No, because that's impractical.
It's impractical.
I think we have to see the poor. We have to give to them. We have to pray for them.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've told you before, I answer the phone for St. Vincent de Paul. And I have these poor people call and say, I'm homeless. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it breaks your heart.
It does. It absolutely does. And there's very little in Warrenton, you know, for homeless. Mm-hmm. The shelter's always full. So, but, and you know, you wonder, well, how did they get there? You know, old people.
Yeah.
You know, our age, and they've lived a whole life, and they maybe have an apartment that they can't pay the rent for.
Yeah.
That's sad.
It's very sad. And a lot of things could end up contributing to that.
Oh, you know,
all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. Many things.
And so you never know what got them to that point, but that's where they are.
Yeah.
So you got to meet them where they are.
Exactly.
You know, when I was at St. William of York in Stafford before we moved to Fauquier County, we had a St. Vincent de Paul there, and there was a lady running it who was actually an amazing person, because she could encounter somebody coming for help and within 10 seconds tell whether they're a fraud or for real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was so good at that. You know, I could never do something like that, you know.
It takes experience.
It takes a lot, you know. But she was really good at that. And so if it was somebody genuine, you know, she'd make sure she helped them. Sometimes put them up in a hotel for a night or something, mm-hmm. you know. But if they were a fraud, she'd say, no. Yeah, she was really good about that. But it takes a real talent to be able to do something like that.
I think Christ was talking, even in a broader sense, not just about helping the poor, but making us see that we need to relinquish our attachments to things that are not essential and things that...
Yeah.
You know, aren't going to bring us closer to God.
Yeah.
We're human, and so
right.
we want a nice house, and we want that fancy car, and we want nice clothes and people to think well of us, but really, that is not what we should be aspiring to, you know? And basically, you told the rich guy, unless you are willing to give up your need and desire for those kinds mm-hmm. of things that are really
yeah.
not going to help you in the long run, you're not going to make it to heaven. You're not going to have the
yeah.
union that you think you want.
Yeah. And there's a lot of truth to that. That's absolutely correct. Because Jesus also says in the gospel, and I forget which one it is now. I'm ashamed that I don't remember. But he says, if you put anything before me, mm-hmm. you're not worthy of me. And when you think about just that, he phrases it differently. He said, if you love father, mother, brother, mm-hmm. sister, more than me, and blah, blah, blah. But it's putting anything before him. If he isn't first in your life, you're not worthy of him.
And you have to really think about that, because yeah. when you're dealing with little kids and they're pulling at you and yelling, yeah. you know, you think, how do you put God, just say, help me with this? Mm-hmm.
But that's part of it, because God gave you that responsibility.
Yes.
So putting him first is doing the task that he assigned to you as a mother, father, yeah. whatever, you know. So that's still putting him first, because you're doing the job he called you to do. It's the other stuff that that really you have to really think about, you know, because a lot of people will not give up stuff if they have to.
And a lot of people don't want kids right now.
Yeah.
Do you hear that all
yeah,
the time?
Yeah, they hear that all the time.
And they've replaced dogs. Having children. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, people get a dog instead of a child, you know.
Or two
right.
or three.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when we bought our property back in 1989, I think it was. No, 1990.
Where we are now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was somewhere in there.
Something in there. Beautiful piece of land, you know. A big square lot, a little creek going through it, and borders a river, and nice state maintained road frontage and all like that. So we built a house there. And as I was signing the papers on the property and the land and the house and all, the thought came through my mind that I have to be willing to give this up mm-hmm. if necessary. Mm-hmm. As much as I loved it, as beautiful as it was, I have to be ready to turn around and give it up. And why that thought crossed my mind while I was signing the papers, no. I'm not sure. Excuse me. But it crossed my mind that, you know, I've got to be willing to give up almost anything.
Yes.
You know, if God calls for me to do that.
Especially family. I think a lot of people are ready to give everything except their family. And yeah. it seems like their family, if it's a basketball game or whatever, comes yeah. before God.
Yeah.
They don't realize it.
Yeah,
or,
we see a lot of that, you know. Yeah. yeah sports well, and everything else, they always come first.
Yeah. Well, this, I've thought about the meaning of this for a long time. I had one bluebird house, and if you know bluebirds, if you put up a house, bluebirds come. And I had one house. My son gave me another one. So I thought, oh, good, I'll have two families. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work that way. They moved out of the first house and went to the second. They must have been upgrading. So,
oh, my gosh. That's
evidently not just people have that.
Or sometimes they say that you have to clean out those houses.
Yes, you do.
But then I've heard other people say, no, they'll...
Yeah.
That's funny. So we got to do the bluebird thing, huh?
Yep. This is the week.
Oh, I already have them.
Do you have them? Yeah, I have seen them around, but I haven't put out my food.
But the idea was that we have to give up something of ourselves to help other people. And the reason we do that is because God loves them too.
Oh,
he loves that poor person as much as he loves you.
Oh, he does. You know, a lot of times I speak for God when I say I am their father too. And yeah. that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And it seems like so many of us have privileged lives. I mean, we may not be seen in the world as privileged, but we do.
Yeah, well, we're not homeless.
Exactly.
You know, we don't live in a homeless camp or anything.
And we have something to eat.
We got family. We got health.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Medicare.
Got Medicare. Yeah, that's right. So, but the idea is in the priorities of your life, you have to put God first. Mm-hmm. And that's the point that I think Teresa's making here.
But you know? I've always struggled being a convert and late to the faith. I've always struggled with all of those types of passages for instance, let the dead bury the dead. You know, he's basically telling him, just I'm not going to let you have time to go bury your father or your mother. You need to come with me now. And I struggle with those, you know, because like you were just saying, like God gave you that family. God put them in your lives for a reason. And I've heard the concept where really he gave us the spouse and the family structure to help us learn how to love and help us learn what it means to be able to sacrifice for somebody else so that we can have a better union with him. But then you're in these relationships, and yet he's telling you to put him first and not the people that are in your family first.
But it's putting, complicated.
It is complicated.
Yeah, but putting God first doesn't mean maybe the people in your family never know that they come second because you give. You know, even though you're putting God first, you're giving the utmost of yourself, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, when you think about it, you know, if you're married, you have to put your spouse in a high plane. You put God first,
right?
But then your spouse, then your children.
Yes.
Okay. Then your job, because your job supports all that.
Yeah.
Okay. But when you say you put God first, doesn't mean that you're ignoring your spouse.
No, you're not saying, well, I'm not going to pull you out of that hole. I've got to go say a prayer.
Right, yeah.
But people do get it confused with Abraham having to kill his son.
Yeah.
Did Abraham trust God enough as the prime?
Yes, because he got a loud message from God. So if you got that, you trust
probably
whatever.
Probably would pay more attention.
You're right. And again, we see that goes to the idea of obedience.
Right.
So if God calls you to obedience, and he does, he gave his commandments, and so we have to obey those, you know. And so when he gave Abraham a command, Abraham said, okay, I've got to do it. Now, he had already told Abraham that he'd be a father of many nations, right? Because when he changed his name, he said, your new name means you're going to be a father of nations. And so Abraham believed what he said. So when he says, take Isaac and go kill him, he trusted that what God told him was going to happen. And Isaac was his only bloodline.
But people reading the Bible don't get it.
No, they don't.
No, but also, you know, we would say, uh-oh, that's against the law. I'll get arrested. There must not have been that, you know, that structure.
Yeah, but the whole idea of obedience is so important. And God tells Abraham, because of your obedience, all nations on earth will be blessed by your descendants. All nations.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a big deal.
I even had trouble with the Martha and the Mary thing. I'm Martha. I'm in the kitchen making coffee and fixing food and getting the house set up and all. You know, but Jesus is saying very clearly, well, Mary's doing the right thing.
Well, you know, I always wanted Martha to sit down and say, okay, I'll listen to
I know.
And then let them worry about what they're going to eat.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so I'm just saying all of those, there's a balance, you know. You can't just take it,
right?
You know,
It's
not black and white.
Yeah,
you can't run off to church and leave your 2-year-old with nobody taking care of him.
That's
well, even when you are doing great things in the church, it needs to be a balance too. Like I know there was a time in our lives where we were doing CCD, and I was doing the breakfast after every mass, and I was selling the script after every mass, you know. And we had 2 young people at home, and you know, you have to
balance.
You have to weigh the pros and cons and do what.
And when God sends you a spouse, he expects you to devote your life to that spouse, you know, and love that person. And that's what he wants you to do. So you're obeying him. You're putting him first when you treat your spouse the way you should. And when you look at the divorce rate in this country, a lot of spouses are not treating their spouses the way they should.
But a lot of men say that by working they're treating their spouse well, even though they don't have time for their spouse.
That's an excuse.
That's a common complaint.
That's an excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rationalization.
It's a rationalization.
But
yeah.
Keep in mind, there are not that many actual marriages. People live together now. They don't get married.
Yeah.
No.
I wonder sometimes, because there are committed people who live together but don't get married for whatever reason. Does God consider that a marriage?
No, it's not a marriage. It's a relationship, but it's not a marriage.
It's not a marriage.
But we have to just let him work that out in the end. We're still supposed to do a marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Now it seems like most people are in that situation.
Yes. And a lot of
that's what gets confusing, and you think you respect the people, you know they're good
yes.
people. How could they be that bad?
No, and you know that a lot of times the reason they don't go through a marriage is because they're expected to have a big wedding of thousands of dollars and invite everybody.
Oh, there's
we
a
don't
million reasons, yeah.
That, you yeah. know.
Yeah, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Well, the good thing is that it's up to God to decide what to do
yes,
with people like
true.
That. It's not up to us to judge him. He says, don't judge. Yeah. And so we pray for them. We pray that they can develop a relationship with God that is proper.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's conformance with his commands. You know, he gave us the commandments and everything else. And we just have to obey him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of people don't want to take the time to learn what they are and pay attention to them and all, and that's up to them. They'll have to answer for that at some point.
Well, look, a lot of people don't acknowledge that there is a God.
That's true.
Well, that's what it's come to now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I told you I'm dealing with this guy on the internet now.
Yes.
You know, and so hopefully things might change, but you never know. Yeah, you know, it's. But the idea is always putting God first, and when we actively involve ourselves with the relationship we have with other people, like our spouse and our children, we're actually obeying God, because he brought that relationship into our lives. You know, I've got a little coffee mug that says, "No one comes into your life by accident."
Mm-hmm, that's true.
And so that's a lot of truth to that. And so he's going to send the right person into your life. And if you just have to kind of put your antennas up and recognize it and then live that way. And recognize it. And it's not always easy, because people go into a marital relationship sometimes thinking, well, what's in it for me? They don't think, what am I bringing to the relationship? And they don't talk about that. You know, and then they get into a marriage and they say, oh, what a big surprise. It isn't what I expected. So I want out, you know, and it's a mess. It's a mess. People just don't do it right. So 3162. Teresa says some of these souls cannot accept patiently that the door of entry to the place where our King dwells, the seventh dwelling place, be closed to them who consider themselves his vassals. Teresa then tells her sisters, it is enough for you to be God's vassals. Don't let your desire be for so much that as a result you'll be left with nothing. What is she really telling them here?
Well, Your goal should be the relationship with God, not that I get to this place, I get to this place, I get to this
right.
place. It should be the relationship. That should be your goal. I mean, isn't that correct?
Well, she talks about patience here, too. So you should have the patience. You can't get to the seventh dwelling place. God has to bring you there,
yeah.
right? And so the only thing we can do is try to grow in prayer and dispose ourselves to where God is willing to then take us to that point. So we can't control that. God's in control. And what she's talking about is people who are impatient. They think just because they're servants of God, his vassals, that he should open up and just bring us all in You know, and they don't want to wait. They don't want to have the patience to let him decide when to do that instead of us.
You need to be grateful for whatever he gives you.
You get grateful for whatever he gives you. And Teresa will tell us that sometimes people go through all these different stages and don't really experience the things she did. But you're still able to get to that seventh dwelling place. So it depends on what those different things are.
Like what? One thing that she wouldn't have, or what they wouldn't have experienced that she did.
Not everybody has ecstasies. Not everybody has...
Yes, the spiritual consolations and those kind of things.
Or visions or, you know, the special gifts and graces that are only given to some people.
Right. Yeah.
And I always think that the people who don't have any of that stuff and still believe have the better thing.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been given any, I'm going to put in air quotes, evidence.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true.
Because God knows that you will seek them, him and love him no matter what he gives you.
No matter
you.
What. And so you'll still get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a time when the Blessed Mother was appearing in Cincinnati at the Holy Spirit Center as a Lady of Light. And she would come once a month. And a lot of people who were there could see her coming. And the angels would accompany her. And so they would all come around, and they have these streaks of light coming around. And you see the angels blowing their trumpets. And some people took pictures of this, and it actually showed up in their film.
Oh.
So I have some pictures of that on my computer. But Father Smith, who was running the Holy Spirit Center, never saw it.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So these people needed that for their faith. He didn't. You know?
Or like being slain in the spirit.
Yeah.
Lots of people that are already faith-filled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't get slain.
Yeah, because the Blessed Mother had picked three priests to help with this ministry. One was Father Rinford on the East Coast, Father Smith in Cincinnati, and Father Sweeney out in Utah. And I got to meet all three of them. They became good friends. And she did special things with all three of these priests. And it's funny because I met Father Smith in a really funny way. I heard there was going to be a special thing going on there one night. And so I went to Cincinnati, and I drove into the Holy Spirit Center, and I saw this priest walking across the driveway. And I said, "Are you Father Smith?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I got this message on email that said there's some kind of big thing going on here tonight. You know where it is?" And he said, "There's nothing going on tonight." You know, so we kind of chatted for a while, and then he took me on a tour of the place and showed me what they're doing. She was trying to take that center, which was the seminary and bishop's house, which had been abandoned, and she told him she wanted him to acquire that and then turn it into the spiritual center as a place for retreats for monks and priests and all this kind of stuff first, and then laity later. And so we got a nice little tour of the place, and they showed us how they were doing all this kind of stuff. But that was really weird.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'd get a message to go there because of this meeting, and I go there, and he says, "Ain't no meeting," you know. But here it is, you know. And it was a good thing because I got to see what was happening as a result of her request, you know, because at first when they tried to buy it, the bishop wanted a ton of money for it, and they didn't have any money. And they ended up buying it for a song.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started putting it into the spiritual center. It's really kind of cool. But she does those kinds of things, you know. The Blessed Mother's really amazing when she does things. When she wants something to happen, she makes it happen. And it's just really kind of amazing. And she does the same thing with us, you know. So one of the things we have to get in the habit of doing as we're progressing in prayer and learning to love God more and talk to him is also rely on her, because her job is to bring us to him. So you ask her for her help. You know, if you want to grow in prayer, she's the perfect prayer model. So you go to her and say, "Please help me grow in prayer."
And her will is his will.
Yeah, exactly. You know, she's always in tune with his will. So she's going to help you with it in whatever way you need. Some people have a very distracted mind and everything, you know, but she'll help you any way you need to be helped. So, the idea of patience is important here. We have to take it a step at a time and know that God's in control. He's going to help you progress at the rate that's good for you. Some people will go faster, some people will go slower, but whatever the rate is, that's the right one for you. He's going to take you through that growth. And so self-knowledge and humility play a big part in that, because you got to know where you are. And, you know, if you're impatient, then you're not being humble enough. That's the first big sign. If you're really impatient, I want to be there, I want to be there now, like that, you know, that's not being humble, because you're thinking in your mind that you deserve to be there. Mm-hmm. And that's the first big sign that you're not being humble enough. Because we don't deserve anything that God doesn't give us. Everything we have is a gift from Him. So that's the important thing there. And then she concludes section 6 with, "Don't ask for what you have not deserved, nor should it enter our minds that we have merited this favor, however much we may have served, we who have offended God." So what does this tell us about our responses to the couple of questions we just were talking about? Do we deserve to move on to the next dwelling place? And that's an interesting question, you know. Do we deserve to move on?
No, every grace is a gift from God. You can't demand anything.
That's right.
I have a hard time with the word deserve, because I don't know that, you know, you might deserve a punishment, but I just,
yeah,
that you deserve good things. And even, I don't know. You deserve whatever God wants to give you.
Yeah. I think it's all a function of love. I think the more you love God, the more disposed you are to be in communion with Him. And if you love Him enough, He's gonna favor you with certain things.
But do you deserve it?
No.
Yeah,
it's a free gift. Just
yeah.
Like faith. Just like faith is a free gift of God. Nobody deserves faith.
Right.
But He
yeah.
gives you that, you know. So everything God gives you is a free gift from Him, because all of us are sinners. So we can't say we deserve
anything. Yeah.
So we try to dispose ourselves to receive, but it's up to God to give.
Yes.
And that's the thing you have here. You try to do everything you can to follow His will, to do what He tells you to do, and to not commit sin. You try to avoid all the sins and all. So you do everything you can to get to that point, but then you're disposing yourself the best you can to receive whatever He decides to give you.
Yeah.
But it's up to Him.
Yeah.
And He might give you one thing, He might give me something else. You know, all depends on that relationship that He has with you.
And He also gives you what you're in need of.
Yep. Yep. And sometimes He'll give you a cross.
Yeah.
You know, because maybe He figures you need that. Not because you need to be punished, but because He wants you to offer that suffering up to Him, because somebody else needs the merit of that mm-hmm. suffering. And that's a big mystery that people don't understand. You know, they get a suffering and they say, well, why am I suffering, you know? Well, you don't worry about why. You just, unless it was up to you and you did something really stupid and now you're suffering. Like you jaywalked and got hit by a car. You know, it was your fault. But if you just have a suffering of some kind, you offer it up. You don't worry about, you know, why you have it. You deal with it as you can. If it's a disease, you go to the doctor and take whatever help you can get. But when you're dealing with it, you don't just sit there and complain all the time. You go to God and you say thank you, you know, for this opportunity to offer you whatever suffering I have. You make it part of your daily offering. And that's a hard thing for a lot of people to do. But a lot of times you don't know why you have a suffering or a cross. So you just offer it up. so he's going to give us what he wants to give us, and we don't ever should never think that we deserve it or merit it. Oh, we're almost finished time-wise. 3171. One of the trials Teresa speaks about is dryness in prayer. She went through that for several years. She says, I cannot help but think that anyone who makes such an issue of this dryness is a little lacking in humility. How is making an issue of dryness a sign of lack of humility? What are they doing when making an issue of the dryness?
Because they're saying they deserve more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It goes right back to the previous question. He said, why are you giving me this dryness? Why don't you let me pray right, you know? But a lot of the saints went through this. Teresa went through it for several years. Mother Teresa went through it for several years. And so you just deal with it.
Yeah, you know, as far as Mother Teresa, I wondered how she still had the strength to progress with her mission, which was very hard.
Yeah.
At the same time she was suffering the dryness, she must have still had faith in what God wanted her to do.
Oh, she did.
If you look, even though he wasn't,
yeah,
you know.
If you look at what she says about her work, it's really very interesting because she would go out and find people who were on death's door, you know, mm-hmm. and she was a little tiny thing, and she'd pick up these people and carry them back to her room. And she'd bathe them and put them in a bed with clean clothes and feed them and everything else. And somebody asked her one day, how can you touch somebody full of sores and all like that? She says, I'm not doing it to them. I'm doing it to Jesus.
Yeah.
Because she believed what he said. Whatever you do to the least of these, you do to me. Mm-hmm. And she took that to heart. And then she said, I want these people to know that before they die, that at least one person loved them.
And she wanted to feel that lack of consolation that they felt.
Yeah.
The poverty that they felt.
Yeah.
Yeah, my granddaughter, during her spring break, she goes to Colorado, mm-hmm. Denver, mm-hmm. with the Sisters of Mercy and works on the street with them. Mm.
Yeah. It's amazing work they do. It really is.
Oh, it is, yeah.
It's really amazing. And they were called to that, and so again they got the call, and they were obedient to that call. They devoted their lives to that kind of work, and it's amazing. So a lot of one of the things that I think we have an obligation to do is in our prayer life is keep listening to what God's trying to tell us to do. You know, sometimes you get a sense that, gee, he really wants me to do something. And so you go do it. You know, you don't question it. And that's kind of important, I think.
I think it's hard, especially with communion, because, you know, they're trying to renew our devotion. And if you're dry at communion, and it's already a mystery, I think it's really hard.
It's hard.
For people, because we aren't instructed anymore. I mean, kids aren't like we were.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
It was talked about all the time, but nobody else gets that.
Right.
And then if you're dry on top of that, it's really expecting God to do it all.
Yeah. and if you are going through dryness, the one thing that helps you through that is faith. You trust in God.
That's all you have.
All you have, yeah. You have to trust in Him. You have to recognize that He loves you infinitely, and He wouldn't give you this dryness if it wasn't for your spiritual good. And you just have to recognize that and say, okay, this is what He wants me to deal with, so I'm going to deal with it for as long as He wants me to.
Mm-hmm. Which He's going to tell us, but we have to hear.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's 8:32, so let's stop for the day here. Excuse me.
So we start next. 3172.
3172. See, when they're at 72, yeah.
Did you get your wife's cold?
No, I got a sinus infection.
We both got it from
That's
Brandon.
That's what I'm talking about.
Babies, yeah.
They said there's so much of it.
Yeah, we were babysitting, and they just cough right in your face, you know.
Oh, I know. like week three.
But you still love them.
Yeah. Yeah, one
yeah
is
we
one,
still love them.
One is 3 years old, and one is 3 years old, and one is 1 year old.
Yeah.
Yeah. They come down with everything.
They do.
But, yeah.
I love their little minds. So.
Yeah. Any final thoughts before we leave for the day?
Just, I don't know if I missed you sending out, but the furthest that I have in the notes that you sent us go to chapter 2 for,
You don't have the third?
Just send them all.
Well, it's the third, but it's at the very bottom of the page.
Yeah.
2.1, and it says chapter 2.
Did he hand those questions out to you?
I had the third was online.
Oh, and you printed them out.
I printed them out, but I need the fourth.
She needs a couple more pages.
I don't have the fourth.
Okay. I'll send that out again. And I'll also send out the fourth. Dwelling place questions too.
Yeah, so could you? I only have a cell phone and it doesn't work. So could you send? Could I give you Jim's
email?
Yeah, and you can print it out there.
And then I'll print them out. Yeah.
Okay, you can put it right on here.
Thanks.
Okay, and I know Eleanor's going to need a copy.
It's her birthday today.
Yeah, so I will give Eleanor. Your hand is up. Do you have a question or anything?
Oh, she's there.
Yeah. I know, I'm trying to unmute her. Eleanor, if you have a question, you got to unmute her. She's not unmute.
She has trouble.
Okay. She's got a raised hand, but I don't hear her. So, okay. Well.
If she's sitting in front of me tomorrow, I can ask her.
Yeah. But I know she's going to need a copy, so I'm going to print out a copy for her. Because I don't think she's got a waiter.
Right.
But, can you print them out?
Oh, I can print them out.
You can, okay.
If you email it.
Yeah, I'll email it to you. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'll send out three again to make sure you have all of it, and then I'll send out four as well.
Thanks.
Four is big. It's got four chapters in four.
Okay.
So it's pretty thick.
Thick like how much? Oh, you mean in the book it's thick?
No, in the questions.
Questions.
Yeah, it's
thick.
A good stack, so we'll do that.
Thank you for the donuts. What more could you want out of life?
Yes, sir.
Where's our donuts?
Pardon?
Yeah.
I would love to send them through the screen here, but I haven't figured out how to do that yet. Well, I needed one of those transporters on Star Trek, you know. Mm-hmm. You could put it in there and then transport it over to you. Yeah. Whatever they call those things. Okay, we'll see you next
week.
Yeah, you too. We'll see you next week. Have a great week.
Thank you.
See how many pages. A lot of times I'll download it, but only print out, you know, if it's a big stack.
Well, this is a good size stack.
This is four.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so I could probably print out 10 pages.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, at a time, yeah. No problem.
I know Bonnie was in church, too, but she has a new baby, you know.
Oh.
I think it's the daughter's sixth.
Oh,
so,
I didn't know.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Doing that.
That's awesome.
Have a good week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's going to be a cold week.